This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Happy New Year. Today we continue our holiday series, Songs from Hollywood and Broadway. Randy Newman has written music for many films, including Toy Story, A Bug's Life, The Natural, and Ragtime. He received a total of 16 Oscar nominations for Best Score and Best Song, and won an Academy Award for his song, If I Didn't Have You, from Monsters, Inc. He grew up near the business. His uncles Lionel and Alfred Newman wrote many now classic film scores. Randy Newman is also well known for his performances of his own songs. Some of his best-known songs that were not written for films include Short People, Simon Smith and the Amazing Dancing Bear, I Think It's Gonna Rain Today, Sail Away, Baltimore, I Love L.A., and Lonely at the Top. He recently released his first ever album of solo studio recordings. It's the first of a projected three-volume series called The Randy Newman Songbook. We're going to hear excerpts of two Randy Newman Fresh Air appearances, but first, let's hear a track from his new solo CD. This is Political Science.
No one likes us. I don't know why. We may not be perfect, but heaven knows we try. But all around, even our old friends put us down. Let's drop the big one and see what happens. We give them money, but are they grateful? No, they're spiteful and they're hateful. They don't respect us, so let's surprise them. We'll drop the big one and pulverize them. Asia's crowded, Europe's too old, Africa's far too hot, and Canada's too cold, and South America stole our name. Let's drop the big one, there'll be no one left to blame us. We'll save Australia. Got surfing too. Boom goes London and boom Paris. More room for you and more room for me. In every city, the whole world round, will just be another American town. Oh, how peaceful it will be. We'll set everybody free. You wear Japanese kimono, baby.
Randy Newman from his latest CD, The Randy Newman Songbook. Here's an excerpt of the 1992 interview and performance he recorded in our studio.
Have you developed a separate sound for accompanying yourself at the piano than you'd use if you were just sitting at the piano alone to play? I mean, do you think of yourself as having a sound that you use when you're singing?
A pianistic sound?
Yeah. I mean, I think of you as having one, but I couldn't explain
it. I don't
it.
Think of it. But I probably just adjust to what I'm doing, yeah. I have a style of playing, I think, that I can tell it's me, if only because I can't keep time.
Is there a certain kind of left hand that you think of as you or something?
Oh, you know, my son does this imitation of me, you know, without hitting, he goes, you know, it's a, this I'm very fond of shuffles. I have been all my life. It seems to be my natural mode of expression. My mother was from New Orleans. I don't know whether that has anything to do with it. But, Blue Monday, I hate Blue Monday. Got to work like a slave all day. I mean, that's the stuff I love. And people don't tend to like shuffles that much, you know, and drummers hate them. But I've written more than I should have, you know, so maybe there's something to my left hand.
So when you first got access to a piano, when you were trying to do things that you heard?
As a kid?
Yeah, as a kid.
I never tried to do things I heard. I just played out of the little, you know, the Thompson from a Wigwam book at the party.
was that was getting complicated there. But I never, my, you know, there was music in my family. And I remember when I was about six, all of a sudden, there was like a piano in my room, you know, just in case I was Mozart, I think they wanted to have the, this thing looming, an upright, Hoffman upright, looming over me. My dad was a doctor, but he loved show business, you know. Before he went in the Army, he went on that Hollywood Caravan tour. One of my uncles conducted that thing during the war, and he was a doctor on that, and I guess he never got over it. But, I mean, I think he wanted me to be a musician, though he never admitted it. I mean, what was the piano doing there, you know?
Right.
I didn't know what to do with it.
So did you impress them with your musical skill early on?
Yeah, I did with my ear. You know, they could play a record, and I would name them what it was when I was very young, apparently.
So if you started off playing all these, you know, piano for beginner type
sure.
books, how did you start to learn rock and roll? Did you just pick it up from records? Could you?
I think I did when I was, started 15, 16. A friend of mine suggested, you know, why don't you try and write some songs? His father was in the record business, so I did. And then a publisher signed me up. But it isn't like you'll hear stories. A lot of guys listen to a record. It did something to them. It clicked some kind of switch in them where they'd listen and copy the riffs on everything. I never did it. I was pushed kicking and screaming the whole way, it seems like, into music in some kind of ways. Even when I was in college and people would be all, they'd say, oh, did you hear Shostakovich's 11th Symphony? Or I don't know what it was then, about 11 maybe. I hadn't heard, but I was better than everybody at composition classes and stuff like that. Worse at, you know, sight singing and things like that. But I was good at it. I had talent for it.
Were lessons forced on you?
No, but I never always felt I wasn't practicing enough, and I wasn't. I there's no doubt that I have some talent for it, and I probably have developed some of it too. I know that sounds odd, but.
What was the first kind of stuff you started writing at the piano for yourself?
The first thing I wrote was like a summer song. I was 16, 17. They tell me it's summer. It went. But I know it's a lie. Cause summer's for laughing. All I do is cry. Jeez, I don't know whose key this was. But anyway, it was recorded by the Fleetwoods. Man, they tell me it's summer. But I know it's a lie. Cause summer's for laughing. All I do is cry. Things like that, you know. Not really bad, but just vapid.
Let me ask you to do another song.
Absolutely.
Is there one you particularly like to do, or Dixie Flyer, or Emotional mm-hmm. Girl, or...
I'll do Emotional Girl. She's a real emotional girl. She wears her heart on her sleeve. Every little thing you tell her, she'll believe. Cries in her sleep. I've heard her many times before. I never had a girl who loved me half as much as this girl loves me. It's real emotional. For 18 years she lived at home. She was daddy's little girl. Daddy helped him move out on home. She met a boy. He broke her heart. Now she lives alone. She's very, very careful. Yes, she is. She's a real emotional girl. She lives down deep inside herself. She turns on easy, it's like a hurricane. You would not believe it. Gotta hold on tight to her. She's a real emotional girl.
Is that song about somebody? I mean, somebody, you know?
It's about a bad guy, I think. You know, I mean, it sort of slips by as a love song, but he shouldn't be telling anyone what he knows about this girl, in my opinion. But I let it go. What a beautiful love song. I don't think so. I think he shouldn't say, you know, she turns on easy like a hurricane to anyone else. I've seen her cry in her sleep. What business is that of anybody's? I guess I just can't help myself. I sometimes play the thing from Parenthood, you know, in the show I do, and it's so atypical of my work. It's so jolly, but my doing it, it sounds evil, you know, even somehow.
Well, the song from Parenthood, I'd Love to See You Smile.
Yeah.
Wasn't that used for a commercial?
Yeah. A
Colgate, camera or something?
For toothpaste.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see,
I agonized over that for about half a minute.
Well,
I didn't know what to do.
It's almost as if it's easier for you to write songs in the character of people who you really don't like.
Oh, I got some sympathy for every one of them. But basically, that's sort of true. I wouldn't say I dislike, but I'm more interested in that. No one else does it. I wrote love songs, you know, when I was a kid, but I don't write many now.
Why not?
There's enough of them, and maybe they're harder. You know, maybe I'm shy. I don't know. I'd write one for another person, but I wouldn't necessarily be interested in it for me. It depends. A song like Marie that's in character, I would. It's an odd kind of, probably some sort of psychiatric problem.
Yeah, right. I was going to suggest that.
No, but I figure, I've always said that, you know, if a short story writer or a novelist or a guy in a movie has the latitude not to be me, well, I mean, why can't I be? And I want to say something else.
Can I ask you to do a chorus of Lonely at the Top?
Sure.
I just think that's one of your really kind of fun songs.
I've been around the world. I've had my pick of any girl. You'd think I'd be happy, but I'm not. Everybody knows my name. But it's just a crazy game. Oh, it's lonely at the top. You know what I was noticing since you're sitting right here and I'm singing?
Yeah.
How hard it must have been, unless you're an actor in movies, you know, I was trying to look at you and sing. It's murder. It would be murder to listen to, you know. I love you, I'll always love you. Jesus Christ.
It's really embarrassing to
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you don't know what to do. I don't know what to
exactly,
do.
Exactly. So are you averting your eyes?
Oh, very much so. I'm afraid. As a matter of fact, I'm glad I can't see audiences. You know, when you do TV, they're lit up. So, you know, you're playing along on Letterman or Saturday Night Live, and you can see the people, and, you know, you see people talking to each other. I'm afraid to look.
Now, I remember from the last interview we did that you wrote that for Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, I did. I thought it really would have been kind of hip if he did that.
Yeah.
And I played it for Streisand, but she said, well, people would believe it. You know, if she sung that, maybe she's right.
Do people believe it about you? Do they think that you're singing?
It depends. Some towns. You know, I used to play it in Philadelphia, strangely enough, where we are, and they wouldn't laugh. They'd think I was at the time, even if there were 12 people in the audience, you know, at a club.
What was your image of a songwriter back then? This was a kind of transitional period in the early 60s. You know, you're past Tin Pan Alley. You're kind of in the end of the Lieber and Stoller era. And right at the kind of dawn of the period where bands are going to be writing their own songs.
The image that I cherish and love was like, I remember Donald O'Connor and Sid Fields, I think they used to play this song right here, and they'd, listen to this. Jimmy Cagney had a movie like that once, except he was a writer, I can't think it was, with Pat O'Brien. I loved the idea of these two guys getting all excited about some, you know, Korean War song or something. The image I had was that ancient motion picture image of Tin Pan Alley and two guys hammering it out. And it was also of Carole King and Jerry Goffin and Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil and the people who were very successful contemporaneously with my attempts to write songs for people.
I want to get to another track from the third CD on your 4-CD box set, and this is the CD of demos and other mostly previously unreleased material. This is a song called Love is Blind, which is, you know, just as the first song that we heard, Golden Gridiron Boy, is very out of character for you, this kind of cheerful, well, not cheerful,
no,
but an upbeat football song.
It's a generic lyric.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That's what it is.
Right. You say in the notes that you wrote it when you were 18.
Yeah.
So you were 18 and already writing that love is bitter, love is hopeless, love is blind. It leads me to think that you already had a sense of your self as writing more dark and cynical songs than your average songwriter.
Well, there are some pretty lugubrious love songs, you know. I mean, a lot of them are pretty bleak, you know, he stopped loving her today and a lot of country things. But I was a pretty down cat, I guess. I don't know.
Well, let's hear this song, Love is Blind, written in about 1962. The recording we'll hear is 1968. And this is from Randy Newman's box set, Guilty, 30 Years of Randy Newman.
They say that love's a sweet thing, and for lovers the sun will always shine. But in spite of what they say, I think of love this way. Love is bitter, love is hopeless, love is blind. I learned the hard and lonely way. Love can't last through the years. I spent 1,000 empty yesterdays hiding behind a veil of tears. Now poets may write about love, and wise men may sing his praise, but I'll always remember as I go through the empty day. Love is bitter, love is hopeless, love is blind.
Love is Blind, one of the demos on Randy Newman's box set, Guilty. What were you saying there?
I was laughing at the ending. You know, I was just sort of aimless wandering. You know, in the motion picture movie business, we call it grazing. You know, it's just like, you know, I was waiting to end it. I know where I should have gone, but I didn't go there. It made me laugh.
Well, that was a demo. Did you ever record it other than that for yourself?
No, I never thought enough of it.
Well, I like it a lot. Why don't you?
Yeah,
like
I do
it?
Too.
Okay.
Oh, Veil of Tears.
Well,
you know,
sure.
Things like that. I mean, I grew to not be able to stand that stuff coming from myself. I mean, I'll listen to records and love them, and they'll have lyrics like that in them, but I can't do it. You know, it's like if you know better, don't do it.
I just figured I could put kind of like little quotes around the Veil of Tears and say, oh, that's a little tip of the hat to the genre.
Well, that's being too kind. I mean, it's just, you know, none of it was heartfelt in that, you know, I don't think I'd been in love with anybody You know, I certainly didn't have all these sophisticated, you know, it's bitter and blind at 18, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I hope not. I couldn't, I just didn't think of recording. I like it, too. I like everywhere it goes. The harmonic, you know, structure of it, I mean, it sounds like me. It's what I do today.
So many pop songs are supposed to be sung in the voice of the seducer who's bragging about how good a lover he is.
Yeah.
Did you intend this to subvert that kind of song?
Yeah. And it's really a great idea because it's a widespread thing. You know, people don't necessarily talk about it. I mean, you have no idea from knowing a person, my experiences at least, that what they're like sexually or you can't even guess at that. That and money. You know, you can try and borrow $5 from someone you've known for 30 years and they won't give it to you. And it's a complete unknown. And I really liked, this song is short, but I always thought it was a great idea for a song. And you know, I wished I'd done more, but I couldn't think of what more to do.
Well, let's hear it. This is Maybe I'm Doing It Wrong.
Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Just don't move me the way that it should. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. There ain't no book you can read. There ain't nobody to tell you. But I don't think I'm getting what everyone's getting. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Sometimes I throw off a good one. At least I think it is. No, I know it is. I shouldn't be thinking at all. I shouldn't be thinking at all. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. Just don't move me the way that it should. Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
Why did you write that song as a waltz?
Don't know. It just came out that way. Almost every song I've written has had words and music sort of come at the same time. No, usually the music comes a little first. So I probably was just clumping along like that. And maybe I didn't do it for any artistic reason, though I'd be happy to take credit for any sort of Viennese reason that you'd like to give me.
Oh, well, thanks for the invitation. I have a reason I'd like to give you.
Yeah.
the song is about a kind of frustration in sexuality, but the waltz has such a nice lilt, such an easy lilt, that it's a nice contrast.
It does. You know, it bum, bum. Yeah, it's sort of in one. Yeah, it could be it might be also, I loved a record called If You Got to Make a Fool of Somebody. I don't know which came first, but I mean, I wanted to write something like that. This is an instance, I hear, listen to the audience, where sometimes, Harry Nilsson once told me, I asked him, you know, it was a constant thing with him not performing, why he didn't perform. And one time, it was mainly, I think, because he was frightened of it. I think, but I don't know. But he said once it was because he's worried it would hurt his work, that the audience reaction would be like throw him off because he wouldn't know his good stuff. And it's a very small thing, that thing. You can isolate it as a writer. I mean, the audience will react to some things. Like sometimes I'll throw off a good one. Like I probably could have done better there, you know. But they laughed at it. I knew they liked it. So I left it alone.
Now, could you ever imagine writing or singing a song in the opposite persona, the song of, in the voice of the great seducer, the great lover, baby, I'm so good?
Only as a joke. I mean, why talk if that's the case? Only as a joke. I've probably done that. I mean, almost certainly I've done it in some of my songs. You know, bragging.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of one now, but it's an emotional girl to some slight, strange degree. But I know there's better. You can leave your hat on. That guy's sort of lame, you know. And yet they take it and treat it as straight, you know, sex.
I'm glad you mentioned You Can Leave Your Hat On. That song was used in, what's the movie called? I'm just blanking out on the title. Full Monty.
Full Monty and Nine and a Half Weeks.
Well, Full Monty was such a big art house hit. Did that revive the song and bring you in surprising royalties?
The other thing was even a bigger hit.
Oh.
Nine and a Half Weeks was such a big hit in Europe that it was a hit in almost worldwide. So I guess that it was revived both times, yeah.
So you never know which old songs are going to come back at you.
Yeah. And I did a TV show with Joe Cocker. And I did the thing, and let's see, what did I do it in? Yeah, key of E. And I said, what key you do it in? And I figured maybe do it higher. I figured G, maybe minor third. And he said, no, he did it in C. And I said, C? And up there, I could sing it in C. I could have sung it in C, and the band could have really rocked, you know, and you could have heard it. And he had a hit with it up there, where I was mumbling around, baby, take off your coat. You know, I was trying to get the character right. I just didn't have any sense of, I wish I'd done it in C, to tell you the truth.
So the song sounded different when he did it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, being a sixth higher made it, you know, took you way up there and you really belted it out. Whereas mine was more furtivo.
Right, yours was more the heavy breather.
yeah, but it's sort of harmless, you know. I mean, I think some women's group were offended, but I meant the guy to be kind of laughed at. Though, as I get older, I take it more seriously, you know.
We're listening to a 1998 interview with Randy Newman. Let's hear the version of You Can Leave Your Hat On from his new solo CD, The Randy Newman Songbook.
Take off your coat real slow. Baby, take off your shoes. Yeah, I'll take your shoes. Baby, take off your dress. Yes, yes, yes. You can't leave your hat on. You can't leave your hat on. You can't leave your hat on.
I want to get to another one of the songs on here that I believe was never released.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a song called Let Me Go. And you wrote it for a film called The Pursuit of Happiness, which I looked up in Leonard Maltin's Guide to Films, and he describes it as a sympathetic tale of a young man sent to jail more for his attitude in court than for any particular offense.
Mm.
I don't know if that jives.
I don't remember the court. I remember the picture, Michael Sarrazin, Barbara Hershey. It was an assignment. It was an expression. The song was attempting to be an expression of not caring. He wasn't like a committed sort of radical type. You know, they made all those movies in the 70s. I mean, like a plethora of bad pictures about youth. This wasn't a bad picture, but what the director wanted, as I recall, was something that showed that nothing mattered to this kid.
Do you want to say anything else about writing it before we hear it?
No, but I've always felt that I've done well when I had assignments like that. He wasn't even that specific, but that's what I thought it needed. I like that kind of thing, you know, where where I've had assignments for, you know, like Parenthood or the Disney pictures. It makes songwriting like five times easier.
Okay, let's.
And you lower your standards quite a bit too.
That's important.
Yeah, very.
Well, let's hear "Let Me Go," written and performed by Randy Newman, recorded in 1970.
Write you a letter. Maybe I give you a call. Maybe I drop you a line when I'm feeling better. Maybe I won't have to. Somewhere a river is flowing, rolling on into the sea. Somewhere a flower is growing that don't mean anything to me. Let me go. Let me go, let me go. Don't give me the answer, 'cause I don't want to know. Just let my heart go on beating a little bit longer. I'm so young. I'm so young.
You know, Randy Newman, you described that song as being, you know, written about someone to show how little he cares, but there's so much emotion in the way that you sing I'm So Young.
Yeah, I meant it to be like an excuse, leave me alone, you know, oh, I'm so young. But it's a tough medium to do that kind of thing, you know. I mean, for irony to come across. But yeah, see, the thing I figure, anyone who would whine, don't put anything on me, I'm so young, I'm so young. Now, only a jerk would say that, I think. And the guy knows it, you know. I mean, that's probably maybe putting more into it than can be conceivably got, but that's what I meant, you know, that, oh, you know, hey, I'm so young, you know. People would use their youth as a something to beat you with, you know. I would use it as something to beat with you. It was like in the 70s and in the record business, there were a bunch of people with English accents all of a sudden, and they could have had an IQ of 48, but the English accent would somehow intimidate everyone, and they rose within the hierarchy at record companies. It's that what I meant.
My guest is Randy Newman. Let's hear an excerpt of his score for the film Ragtime. You come from a film music extended family. Your uncles were Lionel and Alfred Newman.
Emil Newman, the forgotten Newman.
And Alfred Newman was head of music for 20th Century Fox. Film scores include Grapes of Wrath, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Captain from Castile, All About Eve, Wuthering Heights. Did your uncles being in the film music business help you think about music as being part of storytelling?
Maybe. The first album sounded like I was trying very much to get things in the right place, to put people, the song Cowboy, you know, I didn't use a piano on it because it was an indoor instrument. And it used to be in movies you'd pay attention to stuff like that, where you don't want to hear, I didn't like it when I heard a piano outside somehow. It took me inside. But, yeah, I mean, I think... It probably did. I've never thought of it before, but yeah.
Did having them in the family prevent you from being willing to sell your soul in order to make it in Hollywood?
I never had a romantic view of Hollywood. And I never had, because, you know, the actors weren't around by the time they were working on the picture. And I would see that, you know, I'd hear them talk about this director, that actor or actress, and there was never any glamour to it for me particularly. I don't know. Maybe you sell your soul a little when you do a movie anyway, a movie music. But I don't feel that way. I think I've done some of my best work writing stuff that I never would have gotten to had not the movie dictated that I write something like that, like The Natural. I mean, I'm not going to write heroic music like that, I don't think. Or at least if I did, it would be very dissonant, I think. And I'm glad I got to it.
Randy Newman, thank you very much for talking with us.
Great pleasure, as always.
Randy Newman, recorded in 1998 after the release of his box set Guilty, 30 Years of Randy Newman. His latest CD, The Randy Newman Songbook, features solo versions of some of his best-known songs.